Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and I am back with you for the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. My guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man, or a man now I like to say who's unstraight. I've been away for a while. It's nice to get back. I've had so many requests for this show. People tell me how healing it is for them, you know, as part of the whole healing process, giving support. And so I'm more than happy to do it. And I'm glad, like I say, that I'm back. Some additional things that are going on as well. I do have Zoom meetings a couple times a month now for women who are isolated and alone who need support. If you would like to be part of this, please get in touch with me. You can write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And I'll be happy to set you up to be part of our Zoom network. It's been an amazing experience for me doing the Zoom meetings because we have members as part of my support group from all over the world. And this has given me the opportunity to actually see the people. Even if it's not live, it's the next best thing to put a face to the name and for us all to be able to bond and unite together. For all those women who are part of my support network, I really appreciate you continuing the support that you always give to keep this message going and supporting new members who come to our group, because support while you're going through this is absolutely essential. So tonight I have a very special guest back, Dr. Ira Gelman. And he's one of our most popular guests. When people hear him, they love him. And last year when we had our healing weekend, we were very excited that Ira came to our meeting, met with our women for a long time, gave them some really good insight as to what's going on in their lives. And since that time, he's been kind enough to be a guest on my show. after that, too. So I wanted to start off my new season with someone who's... And also, Ira joined us on one of our Zoom meetings a few weeks ago. And he will be doing that again from time to time, which is really great that people can talk to him kind of live. So welcome back, Ira. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, Vaughn.
And Ira and I know each other for many years, so we don't want to pretend otherwise. I've known him since he was young. But I'm really so amazed at all the things that he's done since then. And he has some really excellent insight. He has his doctorate in, what is it?
Human sexuality.
Human sexuality.
Specifically, it's in human sexuality.
Yes, so you have a large range of knowledge in that particular field. And when you came to our healing weekend, when you were in our Zoom room, I mean, what is the common theme that you hear with women that are in these situations?
Wait, what was that, Bonnie?
What's the common thread you hear with the women who are part of this network?
Well, I mean, it seems like a lot of the women beat themselves up for being in a situation that, you know, wasn't their fault. You know, people go into marriage assuming that the person they're marrying is, you know, being honest with them. Plus, you know, most of the women, you know, they grew up at a time when no one spoke about being gay, and no one thought possibly that a gay guy, you know, married a straight woman, you know, to keep his cover. So that's one theme. And then it was interesting, in the Zoom that I was on a few weeks ago, the ladies that had some that had adult children, we got into a whole long discussion about how, you know, they kind of almost become like the protectors of dad and think it's great that, you know, dad is coming into his own, and there's like a lack of support that they actually have with their mom. So we were talking about that dynamic, and I think that's probably popular, especially if the moms have daughters. You know, it seems as if the daughters seem to be more, I don't know, like understanding than I think the sons are. So those
more
are two things right there.
Most cases. Yeah, I think in most cases,
yeah.
Women, because of the nature that they are, nurturing and take care of people. You know, I think that's how we are indoctrinated from the time we're born. That women are the caretakers, men have to take care of the women, but, you know, women are responsible for the happiness of everybody else. So I think when they have gay fathers, I know certainly my daughter, when I told her father was gay, she was totally so sympathetic to him. She was very young at the time, maybe 12 or 13, and she felt so bad for him, like something was wrong with him, and she has to nurse him back to health. That was her perspective when she was, you know, a teenager. And I think whenever girls find out, they feel sorry for their dads because something's not quite right. And I think a lot of times these guys manipulate their kids also by, I know mine certainly did, by making them think, well, if your mother was different, I wouldn't be like this. We hear that theme over and over. And can you reassure people that has nothing to do with it?
Yeah, I mean, that's just like, you know, that's like evil. For a man, eventually, when the truth comes out, well, actually, you know, we all know some guys will never admit the truth, but when they do, to try and now dump all the blame on the wife, that is beyond, you know, like evil. If you know, it's disgusting. I really don't have words that are strong enough to say. And ladies, like, don't, you know, I know you reach a point where you start to bang your head against the wall wondering if, like, you really are the problem. And the answer is no. You've been scapegoated all these years, and you're an honest person, and honest people, unfortunately, are easy to burn because since they're not doing something dubious, they're not expecting, you know, other people, especially, you know, someone who's supposed to share their bedroom, and especially if they had kids together, to be lying to them. So besides the lying piece, then there's also, you know, the indoctrination, as Bonnie said, about trying to blame you. And I think that's where a lot of the healing has to come in, is to recognize that, no, this is not your issue as far as cause. You were the one who was victimized here. But I don't want you to go look at yourself as victims, though. That's like a tricky word. Because when somebody identifies themselves solely as a victim, then they kind of dig a deeper hole, in my opinion, because victims don't have choices. And if you don't have choices, it only adds to the depression. You need to look at yourself like you're a fighter and that this is something that, you know, you will overcome.
Yeah, it was good. But I try to tell women, we're not victims. We've been victimized, and it's different. You know, you can still be a victim.
I agree.
Even when you're victimized, you can come out ahead of the game. But with some of these men, what makes me so sad is that women spend so many years doubting themselves. And we'll have that conversation maybe in our next Zoom meeting with you. But I've talked about it to all the times for women who are part of our network, where all the wasted years of feeling bad about yourself, the feeling that you were to blame for something that you had nothing to do with because of the fact that your husband's constant, the man who you trust the most to make you feel good in life, is giving you really bad messages. Especially, what I hold most against them is robbing us of our sexuality, because I think that's something that every woman is born with, should be developed, should be natured, nurtured, and, you know, enjoyed. But they take that away from you by making you feel that you're inadequate. They say terrible things to women. You're too fat. You smell. Your body smells. You're too flat-chested. You're too big-chested. You know, they'll come up with 50 ways to make you feel that you shouldn't be asking them to have, you know, to make love to you because they don't want to. But we don't know that. We're, you know, taking that so literally. When, you know, what kind of man who loves you is going to say that to you? Unless it's really true. And that's why women feel like that. You know, the man who they love the most, who they took vows with, so cherish them forever, is now telling them there's all these things wrong with them, and that's why they don't want to have sex. And so it just knocks the sexuality out of you to the point where you're just numb. And I really think that's disgusting.
It is. And, you know, you use the term wasted years, and you know, the thing I can say is that when anybody goes through healing, let's not, you know, downplay, like you said, you know, all the years that were wasted with the lies and the emotional abuse. But you don't want to reach a point where you let the years after you finally get out of this relationship still drag you down. And that's a constant battle. You know, we all have, you know, the side of us that's encouraging, and then we all have the voice that's the lazy, you know, resistant side. And it's a constant battle of those two voices. And try as you know, many days or even many times during the day if you're having a bad one, to tell yourself that you don't want the past to just drag you down. It's there, but don't think, because if you keep thinking every day of how many years were wasted, next thing you know, it's going to be 5-10 years after the stuff is you've moved on, but you really didn't move on, and don't give those bastards that kind of power over you. Out of your own your own ego, don't let somebody keep you dragged down years later. And that's something that you do have the power to do. And of course it's not easy, but who said it's supposed to be easy? It's, you know, it's life.
I think that one of the other issues, maybe you can shed some light on this. There's an exorbitant number of, you know, women in this group, a lot, who have husbands who we identify as narcissists. Do you think, you know, they have narcissistic behavior? Why do you think that is?
You know, there's not an exact answer. You know, a big question is, are they born that way? Are they raised that way? You know, could it be that there is something genetic or some hormone that has something to do with morality? You know, there's not a definitive answer with that. But, you know, the research in so many cases of narcissism does show that they came from incredibly chaotic or destructive, you know, upbringings. And I don't think people realize how much their family of origin when they were kids still has an impact on them to this day. So the narcissist maybe started out as somebody, as a kid, that felt because there was total chaos around them, maybe they needed, under any circumstance, to create their own reality, but in effect only care about themselves. So they learn to become charming, because that to me is always a red flag. When someone is too charming and you kind of feel like drawn to right to them, almost like a cultish type of person, that right away is like 5,000 red flags that this is a person, who could be a narcissist.
Well,
and that gives them the ability to put you down. Whenever you were saying how, they'll make all the excuses of lack of total physical intimacy, that is something that a narcissist, like a psychopath, would do. Because now to justify their lie that they don't want to tell you, they just turn the tables on you, and they know human nature. These people can make probably great psychologists themselves. So they know exactly what buttons to push and what, what to twist on you in order to make you doubt yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's a control issue, I think, in many cases, too. I think a lot of times when people don't have control in their own lives, they're going to try to control your life. And
I think that makes perfect sense.
They can't control their homosexuality, but they'll try to, control the narrative of you being the one responsible for any of the problems in the marriage. I want to bring up, since you mentioned it, about narcissism. I told people before, people know that we've known each other for a long time, and I actually met Ira through my ex-husband, and you knew him before I knew him. And I know you were very young then, but could you tell that there was something off with him?
No, not in the beginning. Not in the beginning. The background here is I grew up in the Bronx, and, it was very common for, me and the guys to just, like, hang out and BS. And he kind of moved in the neighborhood, and somehow or some way he presented himself like he was this, like, secret black belt of an art, martial art that, like, no one even knew existed. And, he knew enough to kind of, like, teach, although I don't really – you didn't have YouTube back then, so I don't know if he just read books or he did have some background maybe originally. But I can tell you, the guy was so charismatic. I mean, I do understand now how, like, cults, begin, or how people are drawn to cult leaders. So he would try to deal with younger people, like, that were, like, let's say 10, 15 years younger than him. And, just by virtue of having that age gap, kids look up to somebody who's older. And, once again about the lies, no one realized that in the beginning, that he was lying. So, that was my meeting with him.
And he had a lot of young people hanging around him for a lot of years as his cult, as I told people, he had a cult. Grew and expanded and included people who had credibility. That's all they need is one person to have credibility, and more will follow along when they can fool people for so long of a period of time. But was there anything that struck you as being gay about him?
No. He put on a very, just the fact that he presented himself as this, amazing martial artist, and He would definitely make jokes about gay people, and he always tried to present himself as masculine as he could. But there was absolutely no inkling that I had, that he was gay. He never, said anything to me. He never, he didn't do anything to show me any that he was gay. He was very good at covering up.
Right. And he was very good at that, and that's why when I met him, I was not a kid. I was already, 27 years old. And I still had no clue, even though back then gay was not as commonplace as we know it to be today as far as knowing about it. But we all had these images of gay having certain stereotypes, men who were swishy or feminine, you would expect that more so. But when you would see somebody who's a martial artist, there was just no way I could put my finger on that or believe it. And so I said to women that you can't beat yourself up because you didn't know, because these guys don't want you to know. And some of them are really excellent at hiding it. They'll do whatever they can to either confuse you. I remember that before we got married, I tell a story, 2 weeks before we got married, one of the people that we were in the group with came to me, young guy, and he said, I have to tell you something. He said, I know you're not going to like it, but I have to tell you. And I said, what is it? He said, I think you're the man you're going to marry, Bob, is either bisexual or gay. And I looked at him and I said, I think you're really having a problem to even say that to me. How could he be bisexual or gay? I said, why would you even say something like that? You know, because at that point in time, I'd been in a relationship with him for a short time, and we'd already had sex, and I don't think gay people could really have sex with you, and even if it wasn't the best sex, it wasn't the worst. But the point is that he was able to have a sexual relationship with me, so I told this young guy, I'm really sorry, you must be totally off. But once he put the idea in my head, that's when I confronted, you know, Robert, and I said to him, why would this guy say this? And he was so angry. I'll never forget. We were in a restaurant in New York, and he took the table, and he literally lifted it up to throw it over and said, how dare anybody accuse me of being gay? And to be honest with you, I was so happy. I was so happy he reacted that way. And I said, I'm not sure. I said, you know, this is what he told me. I told him who told me. And his reason to me was, well, you know what? He said, I did tell him that I've had stuff happen to me in the past, only because he came to me to talk to me about a problem he's having with a girlfriend, and I didn't want him to feel like he's the only one going through it. So I did say to him, you know, everybody has different things when you're younger and you go through them. And he interpreted that as maybe I had experiences with men. He said, I would never do that. I was only telling him that to make him feel better. And I felt better. I mean, you know, whether I believed it or not, the fact that he was in denial just made me so happy. And so, once again, he had me fooled there. And I think a lot of these men, they just are, they don't want you to know. So they'll do anything they can to make you feel that you're the one who's crazy and they're straight. And they put that doubt in your mind and you want to believe it. I don't think there's one woman in our group who would not have loved to believe that her husband's not gay. We all wanted to believe that. We didn't want to think they were gay. But
yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Right?
That makes you know, I'll give you like a quick like an analogy I thought of. I have a scale, a weight scale, like I'm sure a lot of us do in the bathroom, and I could go months without getting on it because I just don't want to see what the number is going to be. Then when I finally do get on it, just I concoct in my mind, oh, you know, maybe I'm just out of the shower, so some of the water on me is adding to the weight. So to have an accurate measure, instead of setting the scale at zero, I have it set at, like, you know, five below zero. And then I
right.
get on there weight myself. My point is I'm not a total idiot. I mean, I know I'm playing games with myself, but, you know, we all have we all have a reality that we want, you know, to be in. And the problem with that is, you know, we don't really see the evidence and the truth. We'd rather see what we want to see. So just like I want to see a certain number, when we're in a marriage, which is like so much of our identity, it's very easy to ignore. In a heterosexual relationship, you know, whether it's going out or married and someone was cheating, we're talking now, you know, a heterosexual cheating, not you know, a homosexual cheating. It's the same, you know, dynamics that kind of go on where the person who's doing the cheating is, you know, still denying that anything is happening, but there's definitely clues that are there, but it's very easy to overlook them because, you know, the party wants to believe that, you know, what the lies they're being told are the truth. So, yeah, the ladies, you should not be beating yourself up at all. And you probably also had very few, if any, people to talk to about your situation. This isn't something you probably talk to your parents about, especially if they didn't really care for the guy. And then when you finally, you know, when you are in the middle of it, that's part of the healing process, is just dealing with the embarrassment of, you know, telling your family what's happening. And there are women that I've spoken to that still have not told their family the truth because they were so embarrassed. They would rather just say that things weren't working out rather than they were married to a gay man because they feel like, how much of an idiot could I have been? And that's part of the tragedy of this as well.
Well, I think also the fact that people do judge you, and so many times their reaction to you is, you mean you didn't know? We knew. Or couldn't you tell he was gay? We could tell. And, you know, instead of showing,
you know, those are the kind of people. Yeah, but Donnie, those are the kind of people. They all, you know, it's like those of us who are so good at giving out advice, but then, you know, when it's to other people, we're the expert. But then when it's
right,
our own life, you know, we're full of crap. So, ladies, if you, if you've had people act like that with you, you know, they're pulling this, like, holier-than-thou attitude, they're full of crap. They're just uneducated, and, you know, I wonder what kind of skeletons they have in their own closets for them, you know, to act like, you know, like, how did you not know? It's amazing how people behave like that.
One of the things, I understand the narcissism is a personality disorder in most cases, but I really do believe that it's unusual to have so many people who have narcissistic husbands in one group of people. So I'm really kind of coming to the conclusion that when you're a gay husband, you have to put yourself first because you're always afraid you're going to be caught. So you have to always put your needs before everybody else so that, you know, when you're living a lie every single day of your life, you know, you just have to keep that lie going and always living in fear that somebody's going to catch you. And I feel that it makes you narcissistic that you have to think of yourself first because otherwise, you know, people are going to find out your secret. So even though I know that it's a personality disorder, I believe that people can take on that disorder without being born with it. Is that possible?
No, I agree with you 100%. And also, don't forget, like, the more somebody is telling lies and then they have to make up supporting lies, after a while, you almost, like, start to forget that you're lying and you start to believe your own lies. That,
exactly.
That's part of, like, the sadness of this, is that it becomes, like, so, like, with Robert, he was someone that could look you in the eye and come up with such an excuse that sounded plausible, like, right away. And that's another characteristic of narcissists, is they come across as very honest people, and when they spill, when they're telling a tale, it just is very, very believable. And if any of, you know, a psychologist out there is going to say, oh, I could tell, you know, it's a narcissist right away, they're full of crap also. It's not like the hair on the back of your neck stands up when you're with them. It's the opposite. These are people that, you know, you kind of like. Even when you know that they're a narcissist, you know, in my experience, I dealt with some narcissists, and even though I knew they were, there were times where I was, like, doubting myself. You know, and I have
that's
the skill and the experience here. But, yeah, exactly.
And it's interesting. I put this meme up in our support group room. But I just felt this was so good. It talks about narcissists and empaths and in the law of attraction. I'll just read this to you for a minute. It says, the narcissist attracts empaths because they expect someone to take care of them, to put them on a pedestal and treat them, their wants and needs, like they are the top priority, while feeling no need for to reciprocate. But it says about the empath attracts narcissists because they believe they need to take care of people to heal or fix them, and usually on some level don't believe they're deserving of love and affection. So they give and give with the hope of receiving something until they're ultimately depleted. So isn't that true?
Yeah, that was very well stated. Very well stated.
And in a way, they kind of need each other because That's what the narcissist is looking for. Someone who will.
Well, that's
the
question. Yeah, that some of the ladies have asked before about, is there like a personality type that they're looking to target? And in many cases, there is. It's kind of like, you know, bullies, many times, you know, they can sense, you know, fear in someone. So they pick a person to be a victim, knowing that this person isn't going to fight back. So it's very common for these narcissistic men to try to find women that they can manipulate and that also have a need, as you said, to be like a caregiver and nurturing. And they like a shark smelling blood, they just target these people. They target you. So you're being a genuinely nice, loving person is being used as a weapon against you.
This other meme I put up, which was so true of my life, narcissists will ruin every holiday or special occasion. If it's not about them, they will make it about them by creating some kind of drama or chaos. And that's how it was for every friggin' holiday at my house with my ex-husband. I mean, it was always not about the holiday, not about enjoying the family. Always something had to be wrong, and if it wasn't wrong, he would make it wrong. So that it got to the point where they really try to isolate you. Like, he didn't want my family around because they would see how he treated me. And so, you know, he didn't want them seeing that. So he would just start fights at every holiday dinner. Or, you know, he would really make people feel alienated to the point where they didn't want to come back. And that's what he was trying to do. So he could just not have to, you know, give in to anything.
Yeah, that's another form of control. It's, you know, I'm going to control that you are not going to have a good time. Because if I'm not going to have a good time, you're certainly not going to.
I'll never forget when my son was a baby. And, you know, he was really sick as a baby. And I just had to take him to the hospital all the time. You know, I would take him to the hospital and my ex-husband would call me, "When are you coming home?" "Why, what's the matter?" "I hurt my back." "Well, you're an adult. You can take care of that. He's a little baby. I need to take care of him." "You know, you're always taking care of the baby. What about me? What about me?" You know, I was always like, and I know other women in my group have husbands like this too. It's all about them. You know, and if it's not about them, they'll make it about them. They have to outdo everything for everyone. And that's really what the sad part is.
Yeah, that's why having a support group. I'm sorry.
No, I think women have to realize that this is not going to get better. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and that's where, you know, I said this possibly before, but, you know, hope is always presented like it's a positive emotion to have. Hope can be incredibly, incredibly destructive because people hope that someone's going to change, that things are going to be different. And when you're dealing with something like a narcissistic person, hope is a curse to have. They are not going to change. Even if they swear up and down that they will, that's like somebody saying, "I'm going to hold my breath for 5 minutes." And they mean it, but I don't know. I don't know many people that can hold their breath for 5 minutes. And they're so authentic in what they're saying. I think they even believe what they're saying, but it's not in their nature. And once it's not in their nature, the hope is destructive because they will not change, even though they've promised you that they will. And then you have people that go on these speaking tours, you know, that will say, "Oh, you know, I found blah, 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 and now I'm a changed, you know, man." Bull. So many people lie out there. So when you guys read testimonials from other people, keep that in mind, especially if they're getting paid. People lie all the time, but honest people don't realize that. You know, we're very gullible. So to have too much hope in this case is a detriment because you're not. You need to have your own sanity taken care of, and these guys are not going to be able to help, even if they tell you they're going to change. They're not capable.
Some of them, Ira, just want to keep controlling, even after the marriage is over. They're going to fight these women in court looking for custody of their kids when the kids don't want to even be with their fathers. you know, they're going to make their wives miserable. And they're, it's really sad that, you know, you make a mistake. Why can't you just say, I made a mistake. I'm really sorry. It took up 20, 30, 40 years of your life. You know, I'll do whatever I can to make it up to you. And just acknowledge it and then move on. But instead, they are like a dog biting on your leg and they won't let go. And so many of our women have issues with either their husbands abandon them, they don't get any help, or else the husband is trying to control them even when the marriage is over. So that's even beyond a personality disorder because they're just trying to make somebody's life miserable. Do you run into that at all?
Yeah, definitely. And one of the themes that I've heard a lot, you know, in working with the ladies, you know, and listening to what they say in your group is that, you know, they'll say, I just want him to be honest with me. I just want him to admit to me.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
not
right.
going to happen.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, you're looking for closure by him, you know, crying maybe to you how sorry he is. You have to come to closure by just separating yourself from him, not expecting to ever hear a word of sorrow. And the funny thing is, if he needs you for something like money, then he'll say all the right things.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, once that happens, you get sucked in all over again. So it's in certain people and situations, you need to have a clean break, and that is your closure. You don't worry about getting the last word in. You don't worry about the person even apologizing to you. And I know you're hearing me, and some of you were like shaking your heads like, you know, that's really rough. But you're not going to help yourself if you're going to base any of your future happiness on him giving you something that you need. That has to come from you. And when Bonnie said about making life so
difficult.
Yeah, I
think a lot of women are expecting somebody to come to them and say, I'm really sorry for screwing up your life. It doesn't happen because guess what? They don't look like it that way. They don't think they screwed up your life. They think you screwed up their life because they didn't want to be there to start with, and they stayed with you for an extra 10, 20, 30 years when they could have been out enjoying their life. But instead, I hear this from the men all the time that I work with. I was a good husband. How were you a good husband? I stayed there long after I wanted to get out. I said, but you didn't make your wife feel valued or appreciated. Well, you know, she had a lot of things wrong with her, too. Like, instead of just saying, I screwed up, it has to be pointing a finger. Yeah, I did some stuff wrong, but look at what she did. And I say, well, like, what did she do? Well, she was really, you know, always suspicious of me. Well, wasn't there a reason why you were out there cheating on her? I mean, that would make somebody suspicious. It wasn't like she was accusing you of something that you weren't doing. Well, she always had to make such a big deal out of it. She wouldn't let it go. I said, but you were doing it. You know, they take no responsibility. They don't even see, you know, get what I'm saying. And it's really hard for me to work with men in that situation. I refer them elsewhere because I'm not able to do it. If they can't take responsibility for what they've done, that's step one. But some of them just feel that they've done the right thing by staying in a place. And I would like for you to mention this now, talk a little bit about it. Many of these women stay in their marriages for years and years because they're afraid of breaking up a family. Is it better to live in a broken family or to break up a family?
No, it's – I've used this analogy before. If make-believe you have like a bowl, a crystal bowl, and you drop it, and it shatters into, you know, 100 pieces. And then you take like a whisk, pan, and broom, and you collect all the pieces and you put it in a box. But, you know, you still have this attachment to the crystal ball. You know, you're trying to keep it together. But obviously, it's broken beyond repair. So when people are in any kind of a marriage, you are demonstrating, forget yourself right now, for your own kids, what a normal relationship looks like. Kids know when things are not going right as they get older. So the longer you stay in an unhappy relationship and your household becomes unhappy, no, that is way more destructive than getting out of this relationship and getting a divorce. That doesn't mean that when you do get a divorce, because you got to remember, for kids, I don't care if they're like 8, 9, if they're 15, when parents do separate, that is just, you know, for kids, that is like incredibly bad news. But at the same time, if you stay in that relationship and model an unhealthy, you know, marriage, that's even worse. So it's not like I'm trying to say, you know, the sun is going to come out and make everything better and you're not going to have, you know, any residual issues out there. That'd be ridiculous to say. But in some situations, all your choices suck in plain English, but you got to pick the one out of those sucky solutions that does have the best one. So if it's a choice of staying in an unhappy relationship to the point where, you know now what's going on and you're doing it for the sake of the kids, no, you're not helping the kids at all in the long run. You're only modeling behavior for them that one day, you know, they may emulate, and then you can't, like, wonder, you know, like, let's say a woman is married to a guy and the guy is abusive, you know, whether it's verbal or whether it's, you know, physical. The mother is modeling for her daughter that this is something that women should accept, and then she's modeling for her son that it's okay to treat women that way. So if someone is in a relationship where they're trying to, you know, for the sake of the kids, make it work, just use the analogy I gave you. You're going to make it worse by staying in that situation.
And I agree with you because, children do look to their parents as role models. And I call it the monkey see, monkey do, monkey act, just like you syndrome, where when your children see how you act, if you're willing to take abuse, when they get into a relationship, they often just follow that same pattern. And another thing that women have seen in my group, Ira, is the fact that their children start treating them like their fathers, like their husbands treat them. They see that the husbands treat them without respect and without regard. And some of the kids actually follow in that pathway for themselves. They don't show respect to their mothers either. They're fresh, they're arrogant, they question them all the time because they're siding with the father or they're looking at how the father treats the mother. So sometimes that behavior is adopted by the children as well. Have you seen that?
Yeah, it is. It's just like the example I gave about not getting on the scale or turning it back 5 pounds. You know, I'm trying to create this reality that, like, you know, I weigh less than I am. So when kids, they have a very difficult time coming to terms with, because they have to, they don't want to realize that the father in this case was abusive or is abusive to the mother in many ways. Kids don't want to, you know, admit that. So then they side with the dad and turn on the mom as a way for them to live in this fantasy world that everything could have been okay and would have been okay if it wasn't just for you, mom. So that's why I'm saying is that being part of like a support group and talking mm-hmm. about this with other moms going through the same thing is like so important mm-hmm. to do.
Well, we're very fortunate in our group. We have a lot of support from some wonderful women. And, you know, I really appreciate the fact that women are able to contribute to that and to try to make other women feel better. I think when you go through this, it's just so destructive when you're going through this for years and you're being put down for years. One of the things I tell women, and maybe you can reiterate on this, you've been in a destructive marriage for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And now you're looking to start your life over, you know, and go into a new chapter. You really have to do some self-evaluation before you look to meet anybody on how you stayed in that relationship for so long. And you can't tell me it hasn't taken its effect on you. I tell women, we all want to feel loved. We have all been missing this for years. We all want to feel that we're worthy and that people and somebody wants us. But if you just go out without doing some really tough work, either with a therapist or some self-improvement kinds of strategies, you're going to find yourself back. It won't be maybe with somebody gay, but somebody who's also destructive. Because men, you know, once again, who are like this are looking for women like us. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's incredibly important. You know, when you're looking back, you have to learn from, you know, the mistakes or, you know, what happened, the experiences in the past. And one of them is we haven't really spoken about boundaries. We all need to first know what our boundaries are and then make sure we express it to the other, you know, person that we're you know, is intimate in our lives. Because if we don't know what our boundaries are, we're going to get taken advantage of all the time. And then if you don't, you know, if you don't, like the red line thing, if you're going to draw a red line, you need to know that you're not bluffing. So when you are out of this relationship finally, you need to have your boundaries, which, for example, is, you know, somebody talking nice to you, somebody being polite to you. And if you find that those boundaries are being violated, that's time to say adios. You don't want to stay. And that's why rebound relationships can be so dangerous, because the person is like such at a low that almost anybody who comes in and has a nice smile is like, wow, this is what I've been looking for. But that's like a form of projection. You know, we all need to be, you know, loved. And now we may concoct in our own mind that this next person is the answer to our life. But know your boundaries and express them. And then when you express them, make sure they're honored. And if they're not honored, you just say, get out of my life. It's that simple. You don't have to have like a knockdown, drag-out fight. I'm always amazed at people that argue and argue about breaking up. But just do it. You don't have to keep arguing, and you don't have to get the last word. It's over, boom. You have a clean break, and you move on. And you stop looking for validation from the other person, because it's not going to happen. You have to validate yourself and gain confidence. And that, unfortunately, that confidence has been drained, you know, from a relationship that's been destructive for so many years. And that's where the support group could help out, because it helps you get your confidence back. It helps you start to believe in yourself. And if you don't believe in yourself, then the future outlook, you know, is going to be cloudy there.
Ira, while we're on, not on the subject, let's get to the subject. Let's talk about sexuality. I think a lot of times women who have been out of relationships for a long time because they were in a bad relationship, now they want to move on. And I get so many letters every month. I feel so bad for women where there's red flags and they are just totally ignoring them. A man who's in his 50s or even his 60s who's straight wants a woman in almost all cases. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Just because you're 50 or just because you're 60 doesn't mean you're too old to want to have intimacy with someone. And for women who say, well, he's a really great guy. The only thing is that he's a great guy, and he's not very, you know, he gives me a kiss. He just doesn't really have sexual relations with me because he said it's really been hard for him over the years. But that doesn't stop him from being a great guy. It may not stop him from being a great guy, but it doesn't mean that there's not something wrong. And I tell women, what are you willing to settle for? I mean, is that going to be good enough for you, that you're going to have someone who just wants to peck you on the cheek or give you a little pinch, and, you know, that's going to be good enough? Because so many times I hear the same story. The women say, but he loves me. He tells me he loves me. So he's not perfect, and he has this or that, and it's not like great intimate love relationship. But he loves me. What would you tell him?
Well, if he really loves you, I mean, for now, you know, like just quick, like, you know, a little anatomical lesson. As men get older, testosterone does drop, and the male body does not respond, you know, like it used to. You know, when a guy is in high school, even in middle school, going through puberty, you know, a girl that smiles and says hello, you know, gets the guy like crazy. So when guys were younger, it was very easy for them to have an erection and perform sexually. And as they age, things just don't work the same. So if he's not, he should be willing to go talk to, first off, like a medical doctor, have some blood tests done to see what his testosterone level's at, see if something like Viagra is going to help him. And if it's determined that it's not a physical issue, then he should, you know, have a sex therapist deal with him. Because in sexuality, not everything has to be based on intercourse. The man may not be knowledgeable enough. And ladies, I got to tell you, when a guy feels like he's not able to be a good lover, that's probably the biggest sense of self-esteem for a guy is, you know, am I able to please a woman? So if a guy feel, you know, is having some issues, he may totally shy away from sex because now he's lost confidence in himself. So that's where the sex therapy could help. So what I would say to a woman who you know, is saying this guy is a great guy, he loves me, but there's no sex, before you just accept that, use the process that I just recommended, is have him go to a family doctor, and you may have to go because, you know, a lot of guys will be very self-conscious to say something or may lie about going. And then if it's determined it's not something physical, then he should commit to sex therapy. And if he's not going to commit to sex therapy, then he's being selfish. Then he's not recognizing that you have your needs, and that's not a good sign when someone, no matter how uncomfortable they are, isn't willing to make a sacrifice for someone that they love. I mean, that's part of a loving relationship, is recognizing that it's not all about me. I have to get out of my comfort zone because I love you enough that I don't want to lose you. So I will do that. And I want to make you happy.
Right. And there's other ways to make a woman happy. Even as men get older, they can't have, you know, the same kind of physical erections. There's all other kinds of things that they can do to try to, you know, satisfy you. So,
of course. It's not that difficult.
Right.
But that's where, you know, the guys need to have a therapist, you know, help almost be like a teacher for them to explain, you know, what they can do. Because so many women will say, you know, that when they do have intercourse, it doesn't lead to an orgasm for them. You know, it's like they had a 5-6 minute, you know, session of sex and that was it. So it's not all about the erection and the penetration. There's so much more to physical pleasure. And that's something that a lot of guys don't understand. Because ladies, you need to realize guys typically don't talk to other guys about like sexual issues. Every guy wants, you know, his friends to think that like he's the king stud. So it's not like guys talk to their brothers or their dads about this stuff. And I guarantee you, a lot of us, depending on how old you are, if you have like a grandfather that's like in his 70s or 80, and he has a lot of arguments with your grandmother, he may be doing that because he's not able to have sex anymore or have an erection, and he's embarrassed to say it. So then he'll argue, so either they go to bed at different times or sleep in separate bedrooms, and then the lack of physical intimacy just becomes, like, accepted as the months go on.
Mm-hmm. And you can have intimacy without having sex, right? You know, intimacy is not just about sex.
Yeah, I mean, to me, intimacy, I'm not defining as sex, because intimacy to me is like an emotional connection, to the point of vulnerability that you have with that one other special person that's reciprocated. And men have a very difficult time opening up about their own sexual problems, because for a guy, that would be, as I said, it's the greatest source of his self-esteem, and nobody wants to feel like I'm not a real man.
So, one last question before we end our chat for tonight. This is an issue some of the women and I discuss a lot. We've had no success as far as having the gay community feel any sympathy towards our cause and telling people you should not be marrying if you're not straight, you know, marrying a woman. And, you know, I've written to different gay newspapers, talked to some gay leaders, asked for some gay support, and the gay community does not want to do this. Do you have any idea why? they would be against that.
Yeah, because I think that at times the leadership there wants to present themselves like they're knights in shining armor and do not mm-hmm. want to have, you know, anything that is going to hurt their image. And just like I've said that women who have been lied to for all these years need to stop looking for support, you know, from their ex-husbands. Other groups, we have to stop looking, expecting them to support us because their agenda is what they see on, you know, their list of the top things. And supporting women who were married to gay men is not on the top of their list. They'll look at it like we have other things to worry about, and so they'll just deny and whitewash an issue that is that needs to be spoken about.
Yeah,
and also people
not-
are worried.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people are worried that if like this whole conversation is not about being gay. This conversation is about being gay but lying about that. And so mm-hmm. I think people are nervous, especially in today's culture, you know, in the woke society, that these mm-hmm. discussions sound like, you know, we're homophobic. And we're not homophobic. That's not what this is about.
Exactly.
So I wonder if, like, the leadership in, you know, the LGBT community, if, you know, they're just not mature enough in many cases to admit, you know, that they need to address certain issues, at least not at this point.
All right. Well, I'm sure I'm not going to live long enough to see what point that's going to come out on. But, Ira, I just want to thank you so much for being my guest tonight, you know, as the show returns, and appreciate all you do for our network as far as showing us support, giving women that encouragement because they feel so much better after they talk to you. And, you know, it's really nice of you to spend your time doing this with us, and we do appreciate it. We get so many wonderful comments about you that I'm always happy to share with you. And I'm looking forward to my future upcoming weeks. We do have Dr. Margalef Felsad coming next week, and she's an expert on caretaking the narcissist. That's what her main thrust is, and she's written some wonderful books on this. And then we have Heather Nunez joining me after that. And Heather's been our guest before. She was a member of our network who's a therapist who works with sexual addictions. And, you know, Heather's very clear as far as sexual addictions and why people really don't hardly ever change with that, as you know also. You know, addictions are the hardest of any kind of change. And a lot of times it gives women false hope when they hear that their husband is a sex addict, because that means that he has a possibility to change and just want sex with you, which really doesn't happen either. So I'm really excited. We're going to have some of our members on here, too, in the upcoming weeks. So please stay tuned and listen to the show and whatever support you need. You can always get in touch with me at bondk@aol.com. I'm always happy to talk to you or write to you. And if you're interested in being a guest on the show, please let me know by writing to me. And I'll be more than happy to respond to you. So, Ira, I hope you have a wonderful week, and thank you so much for everything.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
All right. To all of our listeners, have a wonderful week, and I'll be back with you next week. Good night.
Hey, good night.